Take the deal, Mr. President. End one war and prevent the start of a second. The United States right now is sitting on the precipice of potentially starting a war with Iran, a war that would be potentially catastrophic for our interests. There's not even an upside to this, but there is a potentially horrific downside. It could cause the deaths of many Americans that otherwise will not come into any kind of threat at all. And it could damage our interest in the region and around the world in ways that we can't hardly even imagine. Some of them on second and third order kinds of effects, affecting the global economy, affecting the reputation and the credibility of the United States. And that is far more important than it may appear on the surface. Many people may understand why that's important, but it's not. It's other things that go along with that, especially when you realize that the U.S. dollar, the strength of the dollar, lies not so much in any physical capacity as much as it does in the belief and the faith that people have in the stability of the United States. If that comes into question, not just in some sort of intellectual sort of way, but in a practical way that people start to really recognize around the world in different regions of the world that the United States is no longer trustworthy or that it is not stable or that it cannot ensure their benefits, they will abandon the dollar and start going elsewhere. It's already happening. It's been accelerating. Starting a new war in the Middle East could just supercharge that and go so far that it can't come back. That could be at stake here. The other issue in the Russia-Ukraine war, that's just been languishing for a long time. There's a deal on the table that can be done. It needs to be taken for the interest of the United States and even in the Western Alliance for that matter. Right now, the USS aircraft carrier, Abraham Lincoln is in the region. And it is now, according to many media reports, already en route, already at station, and an attack could literally come within 24 hours, maybe even tonight, our time. Or it could not happen at all. And that's what needs to be the case. This war needs to not happen. There has been, there's a report out on Axios from an interview that they did, I believe it was on Monday, where it says that the headline reads that exclusive Trump says Iran wants a deal as Armada arrives, with the implication being that only the presence of American military power has now put Trump in a position to be able to negotiate a good outcome that could prevent war. As many have noted, there probably was supposed to originally have been an attack on the 14th of January, but that didn't end up happening for probably because Israel said that we need more combat power in the region before we do it, because I don't know why they didn't figure this out earlier, but apparently they realized that the blowback, if Iran retaliated, could be more than we had the power in the region to defend against. Now then, this one here seems to indicate that maybe Trump is going to do what he does often and make a negotiated deal at the last second, have a bunch of bluster, but really it was about negotiations. Well, the problem with that is when you look down into the article to see what it is that people think that they're going to be negotiating, you see this right here where it says U.S. officials say any deal would have to include the removal of all enriched uranium from Iran, a cap on Iran's stockpile of long-range missiles, a change in Iran's policy of supporting proxies in the region, and a ban on independent uranium enrichment in the country. In short, what that means is that there would be no deal, because that's not something that Iran can even agree to. Those are terms that you would have to be negotiating with over a multiple month, long-term process of take and give. You're not going to get those kinds of agreements from Iran simply by saying, hey, either give me everything that we want or we're going to attack. It just doesn't work that way. The compulsion has had some effect on Iran, but only some effect, and it has caused bleed through in other areas. Like so many people do, if you press on one issue and it's something that's coercive that the other side doesn't like, they'll find ways around it. And Iran has been a master of that for decades because they've always been the weaker partner. That's what people need to understand. No matter all the rhetoric you're hearing, and we've been showing you a lot of videos here of so-called experts, retired four-star generals, admirals, other people who were ambassadors, all kinds of people saying all kinds of claims about how they would be able to, how the United States would be able to succeed if only we were to attack Iran, and that we have to attack Iran because fill in the blank, X, Y, and Z. They're spreading terrorists in the region. They're nefarious. They want to destroy Israel. All kinds of stuff attributed to them. The fact is, forget about the rhetoric. Look at the practicalities on the ground. As we say in this channel all the time, the only thing that matters is what you can do and what you can't do. And if Iran is saying, or other people are claiming that they are saying, that they want to destroy Israel, for example, the question is, can they? Do they have the capacity? You can then say, take a look and see if they have the intent. The intent and capacity is something you need to take a listen to. So pay attention to what they say. But much more than that, pay attention to what they can and cannot do, and they cannot make good on that threat. They can harm Israel. They can fire lots of missiles in and cause lots of damage, as they have proven that they can do. But what they cannot do is destroy Israel and have a military conquest of Israel. They don't even have that possibility. If they could do that, then maybe they would have done it already. I don't know. Maybe they wouldn't have. Probably they wouldn't. Why would they? What would the regime in Tehran gain by having a military conquest of Israel? They cannot like them. That's fine. Lots of people in the Middle East don't like each other. For centuries, that's been the case. But just because you don't like somebody doesn't automatically mean you're going to go to war with them. There has to be some sort of benefit, and there is no benefit to Iran. So there is, and they don't have the capacity to destroy Israel. So the only thing you have to worry about Iran is if you push too hard and you put them in a position where they use their limited capabilities against Israel, and they can harm Israel, as they showed. If you don't provide that motivation and that impetus, then they're not going to, as they showed for decades up until 2024. They had never been pushed that hard, and they had never attacked Israel until they were finally pushed one too many times in 2024. One of the big ones was they had been suffering assassinations for many years of senior people, all kinds of cyber attacks, attacking their infrastructure on the inside, especially their nuclear programs, their scientific programs, and they never pushed back in any big way. They near almost didn't do anything until finally you destroyed their embassy in 2024. And then you assassinated somebody in their capital city during a presidential inauguration, et cetera, which was very clearly, almost certainly done intentionally to design to draw a response, which they got. And then now Israel subsequently used that as justification to go after Iran. But the problem is, it's a lot harder than Israel thought. It's a lot harder than people in the U.S. administration thought. And they thought they could just go in and take them out. Well, you can't. Not on the cheap like that. Until you're ready to go in on the ground with hundreds of thousands of troops and conquer a country, you are not going to defeat Iran. Now, you may want to. You may think, well, we can do it like we did Maduro, or we can do it like we did Gaddafi or Saddam Hussein. Well, not Saddam Hussein, because we actually did do the ground invasion there. But maybe you're thinking we can do it on the cheap like in Libya, where we took out Gaddafi, or Hassan Nasrallah in Lebanon that Israel did. You can assassinate the leader and get a regime change. Well, here's look at those. You didn't get a regime. You got a regime change. You didn't get an improvement in Libya. You still have battling troops, governments to this day, in a terrible condition for the people on the ground there, and there's no kind of stability. So if you thought that's what you were getting in Libya, you were badly mistaken. If you think that taking out Hassan Nasrallah got rid of Lebanon and Hezbollah, you didn't. You just changed leaders. You got somebody else. Same thing in Syria. You got rid of Bashar al-Assad, and now you have Sharia. It remains to be seen if that turns out better or not. For many people in the region, it's already been quite bad, and there's still lots of friction, especially between the Turks, the Syrian Democratic Forces, the Alawites, many of the Christian sects inside of Syria, etc. Lots of trouble there, and of course, Israel in the south. So it's a complete mess. Not a good stable to use as something you want to use as a template. We need to get this war off the table, but we need to give them terms that they can live with. Iran, there is, hear me carefully, militarily, there is no upside to this. There is no upside to this. It's not like you can go in, you can get lucky like we did with the Maduro situation, that we got lucky then. Let's just call it what it is. It was a high risk, high gamble kind of an operation, and it paid off for Trump right now. Problem with that is sometimes you have catastrophic success, as they call it, and then you think you can do anything. And because you were very lucky then and almost nothing bad happened, then you think you can keep doing that. And then you take more risk in areas where you shouldn't have, and you can end up having a terrible, terrible outcome. There's nothing to gain here. If we catastrophically succeeded here, we gain nothing. No, our security will not be any better on the other side of an attack than it is right now, than it has been for decades, because Iran is not capable of threatening us. Iran is not going to go on the attack against the United States in the region, just like it never went on the attack against Israel, for the same reason. They know that if they initiate something, then we will have all the justification in the world to go and just rain death and destruction on them, and no one will be on their side. They understand that. Regime survival is their issue. Even in these times when people have claimed that Iran killed American troops, say, example, during the 2000s, when we had the insurgency in Iraq, because they were working together with a lot of the people inside of Iraq, with the Shia inside of Iraq, we say, oh, well, they supplied some of these EFPs, explosively formed projectiles, penetrators, that killed a lot of American troops. Well, there probably is some truth to that. That's unclear how broad and widespread it is or how far it went up into the country. There were definitely EFPs. I can tell you that firsthand. I certainly saw a lot of that intelligence while I was deployed into Iraq. But what I can also tell you is that's kind of the same thing we've been doing to Ukraine to try and kill Russians all the time. And we argue that that's perfectly fine. So you can't say that's perfectly fine, that we're going to help one country kill the soldiers of another country, and then say, but no one else can do that to our soldiers in a similar kind of conflict. You see what I'm saying? That's another bad track. That's not a Trump issue. That's something the United States has been doing for a long time. We've got to get that under control. There is only downside to go in to do that here. There's no upside to successful, but if things go bad, and if Iran does what it says, and it says, for example, shuts down the Strait of Hormuz, or if it attacks American troops in the region, or if it attacks Israel in a broad and sustained way, they can do so much more damage than they did last year. That so-called 12-day war, it can get a lot worse than that. Why would you want to risk? Just imagine this. I pray to God that we're not playing this video back in the future, and that people will look back and say, okay, on the 27th of January, no Americans were dead. No Americans in the region were attacked. No Israeli city was being hit. No Israeli troops have died. No Israeli civilians have died. Everybody is alive and well. And if we have a negotiated settlement, how that will continue into perpetuity, or at least into the distant future. But if instead we're foolish and we start a war, then on the other side, there will be dead Americans. The whole place could be turned volatile. Even if later you win, that the cost with which you will have won will net a worse national security environment afterwards, and certainly during, that exists right now. Right now. So what we should do for American national security, even for Israeli security in the region, just take an appetite suppressant here. I know that you have a lust for Iran. Forget about it. It's not necessary. And to try is to harm us, is to harm our allies. So give them some terms they can live with. And if people want to say that's Trump's tacoed out, whatever, they can say whatever they want. As long as there's no war, that's the most important thing. And then move on from that. Let's just get this off the table and start getting the region some kind of stability and forget about any kind of conflict that we start. No more wars of choice at all. And that's what this will be, an outright, absolute, unconstitutional, unlawful war of choice. So if Americans die because of this, it won't be because of it was foisted on by those darn evil Iranians. It will be because of a policy choice made in Washington, D.C. alone. No American should ever be asked to sacrifice his life for that. The other thing that we need to talk about real quick, and then I'm going to have to run because I don't have a whole lot of time for another show. But there is the issue here. Recently, there were three-way talks for the first time in a long time between Russia, Ukraine, and the United States. And they met in Abu Dhabi, and they talked about a lot of things to try and end the war. But as you see, the peace talks have ended, and the fighting rages on. So there's no movement there. That turned out to be probably something very similar to what we saw in the Anchorage, Alaska meeting, in the one that when we had Zelensky came to the Oval Office in November of last year. All the bunch of flurry of activity, bunch of the red carpets and stuff in Anchorage, Alaska, lots of phone calls, lots of headlines, no movement. It's time to end that, because we're also fraying our own allies and our own transatlantic connections, things that are helpful and beneficial to the United States, whether that's national security, whether it's economic security, just good relations. There's no reason to put all that at risk. We need to just stop this nonsense with this Greenland situation. Just get that off the table. There's plenty of things we can do within existing parameters and within existing agreements to have whatever kind of increased military presence, some claim that we need on Greenland. I think that would be a ridiculous waste of money. But if that's what you need to do to feel better about yourself, fine, do it within the framework of the alliance, within the framework of the agreement with Denmark. All those things are possible. Greenland will accept something like that, as long as it doesn't infringe upon their sovereignty. We don't need to infringe on their sovereignty. We don't benefit from that. We are harmed by doing it this other way. We're already seeing some ramifications with now Canada looking now not so much to the west, but to the east, into China, making some lots of deals on four continents. Mark Carney talked about this week. He's specifically looking out specifically to lessen leverage from the United States against his country, to give him more flexibility outside. So he's looking to BRICS. You had earlier today, Ursula von der Leyen actually went to, she went to India. Actually, I wonder if I still have that one up. I do. So here is Ursula von der Leyen. This is how even political she is throwing some shade against the United States in India.
Prime Minister, distinguished friend, we're not only making our economy stronger, we're also delivering security for our people in an increasingly insecure world. And today, the world's two largest economies and democracies launch their first ever security and defense partnership. This is a landmark departure and a trust-based platform for cooperation on the strategic issues that matter most.
This is a trust-based in an increasingly unstable world. There's not any doubt in my mind exactly what she meant. She didn't mean Russia. She didn't mean North Korea. She didn't mean Iran. She meant the United States of America. And for all the angst that we've had going back and forth between NATO and the United States and Europe and the United States, where is she looking? She's taking economic, and we have potentially a deal that might even get put on hold if the president had pushed a little bit further on Greenland. And instead, she's making more economic overtures to India, who is part of BRICS. So you see, we're forcing allies all over the place, even those on our own border who should be drawing closer together with us. We have every opportunity to increase our national security and our economic security by pulling our friends closer and working together in cooperative win-win ways. Instead of this absurd stuff where we're always trying to bully everybody and create instability everywhere in the name of 4D chess or some absurd thing like that. It is time we stop doing these things that make no sense for our country and start doing things that make a lot of sense. And you can start off by getting one war off the table and taking another one off the board so it never starts. That's what we need to do for American national security, and I hope we do it quickly. Thank you very much, folks. We'll see you in the next episode of Daniel Davis Deep Dive.